Kev, how you doing, my man?
I'm good. It's winter is here because it is pouring rain in Vancouver. So it hasn't been a good time for the local sports teams here, and now the rest of us get to share in this sort of gray, dull misery.
Nice. We got lots to get to, so hopefully we have time. If not, I might have to twist around and have a second segment today. So I want to start, first of all, with Cam Talbot's play. And, well, we saw it a few things. Number one, clearly miscommunication by the entire team, not just the goalie on the game-winning goal for LA. But that first goal, Kevin, just like goalies, you know, it looks like a guy who's maybe just not having confidence, like a shooter when he doesn't have confidence scoring the goal. Because, you know, that early goal from a sharp angle is one where, you know, Talbot, I'm sure, would like back.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this before on the save executions on dead angles. When that puck is in there that tight, though, it's funny because you remember the one from below the goal line, and we talked about, you know, being patient and not going into your save execution too soon. And if you are going to do it, make sure it's fully sealed. Well, on this one, he looks like he's trying to stay patient, and he's trying to, you know, hold his skates and not commit to that short side post too early, which has cost him on passes across, you know, before in this season, and yet that puck is in so tight that, you know, you almost need to have that short side taken away from there early in advance and just have that sealed up. And so, you know, we've talked about going into it too soon, and here's a case where he gets caught going into it a little too late and the holes aren't sealed and it goes through. And it's just kind of going that way for him. Decisions one way cost him, decisions the other way cost him right now. And I would imagine it's probably a tough time for him to be assertive in his play. He's never going to be aggressive, Jason. If Oilers fans are looking at him for him to get outside the blue paint and be one of these super aggressive, challenge everything goaltenders, that's not how he plays. But he needs to be a little more assertive in his decision-making in terms of his save selections and, you know, kind of trust that everyone else is going to do their job and just worry about doing his right now. And there seems to be a little bit of hesitation and indecision in a variety of different circumstances that are costing him early.
Kevin, goaltenders, when they go in slumps, because they do just like shooters, is it as simple as one save getting a goalie out of a funk? Like one goal, whether it goes off your rear end or off your helmet or your stick, it can change the fortunes of a goal score? Is it that easy for a goalie, or is there more to it?
Well, you know, it can be that easy, but it's usually not the, you know, horseshoe turned upside and inserted type of save that's going to do it. You know, like you said, goal scorers, they don't care. If it goes in, no matter how it goes in, that can lift the pressure off. For goalies, it's usually the other way. It's a good read and making a big save, a momentum-changing save, one that you aren't necessarily being counted on making. In other words, not a routine save, you know, something where you've got to go cross-crease in a hurry and you know, get a glove on something on a one-timer. That type of, you know, dynamic, get the crowd up type save or game changing save, I've had goalies afterwards tell me they weren't feeling that good in a game and that save changed everything for them. So it can happen. But you certainly don't want to sit around waiting for it to happen. And that's why we have goalie coaches. And that's why I'm sure before and after practice today for Cam Talbot, he was out there doing the extra work with Dustin Swartz to make sure all the little details in his game are taken care of, so that he's putting himself in the best position possible, that sort of that foundation, that base, so much of it is positioning, to allow himself to beat passes. That's something he would have heard a lot from Benoit Allaire, the longtime Rangers goaltending guru, one of the best in the business. His mantra is beat the pass and solve the equation. And that's all through movement and footwork, and those type of drills in practice are what give you the confidence as a goaltender to get into a game. And like I said, be assertive. Track that puck, beat it to the next spot, establish your save position early, and be set. And hopefully a big save results from that. But in the meantime, you don't want to be sitting there, unlike the goal scorer, waiting for it to go off somebody's button into the net. You want to make sure you're doing that work, kind of rebuilding that confidence in practice. And it won't come from practice with everybody skating around and flying around and wide open rush drills and guys winding up from 20 feet away and picking the corner. It'll be that work with Swartz before and after practice that'll build that foundation back up.
Kevin Woodley joins us, Crease Lightning, every Monday afternoon from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. The Blackhawks are in town on Wednesday, Kevin, and Corey Crawford's a goalie who, when they shrunk the pads 2 inches, he really kind of had to change his game.
He didn't have to change his whole game, but he did have to change some save selections and being able to count on his equipment to do certain things. And it's funny because I was actually on the ice with him in Montreal at a Reebok CCM goalie summit the first time he wore his new pads. And this was after the size restrictions, the new sizing chart cut on average between 1.5 to 2 inches off the top of most guys' pads. And it's funny because in years past, I talked to Corey about how those rail straight pads that he uses. And I think a lot of the criticism of Crawford is because those pads, they are so straight, he looks funky moving in them. Like, it's just not as smooth when he moves around the crease, so he looks awkward and clunky. And I think that feeds into some of the, you know, some of the criticism of him. But the one beautiful thing about those pads pre-trimming is when he dropped into the butterfly, they went straight out in front of him and formed this triangular wall. And so any puck that hit him off the body or off the pants that he was able to sort of deaden or soften but not trap clean with his hands would fall into this little triangle in front of his knees, and it was covered effectively. Well, he gets out on the ice with us in Montreal that day, and he's lost a couple inches off the top of his pads, and guess what? That wall no longer closes for him. So he had to make some adjustments there, and his knees were a little exposed, and so you tinker with your knee pads. You make sure that even though you don't have that wall closed in front of you all the time to trap those loose pucks, there's at least a wall being formed by your knees behind it or behind the new opening so that pucks aren't going through you. And, you know, that's a bit of an adjustment in terms of, you know, how he treats his butterfly. Does he have enough flair? And when I mean flair, can he get his legs out further when he drops, which helps close the pads, even though they're shorter? Or does he have to adjust and play with a narrower butterfly and just count on the knee pads to make a hole? And, you know, at the time, he was going to have to tinker with that. He didn't know. We were a couple of weeks from training camp, and here he was for the first time putting on these pads. And I think when we talk about equipment, that's one of the concerns that these guys have is, hey, I can't be seeing smaller stuff for the first time right before I go on the ice, especially if we're talking upper body, not just because I have to adjust my game, but I want to know I'm safe in it.
Kevin Woodley joins us. Speaking of being safe in equipment, I want to get to it because obviously it's been a hot topic. Jonathan Quick went out and mentioned how, you know, there obviously it's something that needs to be rectified because there's really not set regulations, Kevin, in the goaltending equipment right now. And there's a lot of steps to get to that. But I guess first address Quick's comments and what your thoughts on that.
Well, first of all, there are regulations. There are sizing charts. There have been sizing charts in terms of measuring guys' bodies and what they're allowed to wear. They did that coming out of the 04-05 lockout, and they established sort of parameters where certain size guys were allowed to wear large or extra large. It was pretty much a gigantic failure because within each equipment company, one large fits different than another large and an extra large. I mean, there's just too many inconsistencies. And at the end of the day, even though that, as far as I know, still exists, was never removed, everybody kind of migrated towards the maximum. And that's the one thing that you need to, you know, I mean, Ryan Miller's come under a lot of, he's become the face of this because he's skinny. He's not cheating. He's using the maximum width that he's allowed to use under NHL rules, but on his frame, it looks a bit bulkier than it does on, say, Carey Price, who's similar height, but 40 pounds heavier and really thicker through the legs. Whereas, you know, Ryan, who happens to play the guitar, is almost sort of has like that very slight rock star type build. So he's kind of become the poster boy, but it's not cheating. And this is where we are. We have to find a way to come up with a sizing chart that accounts for the different body types, that accounts for all the variations in fit from one company to the other, and keep, yes, slim them down, but also keep them safe. And this is a process. You know, there's been a lot of attention on this, and it started with Babcock's comments about the bigger nets, and then the general managers got together, and it was reiterated that we were going to have smaller pants and smaller chests and arms next season. But that shouldn't have been breaking news, because that was decided on last summer, and they've been working towards this since last summer. I've seen one of the prototypes, one of the samples that they're using as an example for what chest and arms maybe should look like going forward. So Kay Whitmore, with cooperation from the Players Association and the goaltenders involved with it, have been working on this since the summer with the goal, with the target of having smaller pants and smaller chest and arm for next season throughout this. Question to me is, how much smaller is it going to be safe, and are we really going to notice a difference?
Now, it's interesting about smaller in what looks smaller, Kevin, and then what actually is smaller, because you told me an interesting point when I talked to you earlier today about how there was some goalie equipment that was made that appeared smaller, but and was actually, you know, the same size as other ones, but because it appeared smaller, goalies didn't want it, right? Because well, that gives the perception, because it's true. When we watch games now, it's like, man, I don't see any holes. Like, it covers everywhere. Has there been equipment made that was turned down just because it gave off the perception that it made goalies look smaller?
Well, I mean, here's what happens. The NHL sets the guidelines, and then you have a bunch of different companies, all of whom pay NHL rights fees if their guys are wearing it at the NHL level, and not insignificant rights fees. They try and work within those parameters to make it look as big as possible, because that's what the guys, the NHL guys, want. That's what they can sell at retail. There have been other units that were worn in the NHL, and the one I think of in particular is the Warrior Ritual. And the arms on this one actually were hard plastic arms with a mechanical elbow. And the idea was it was going to be very protective for the arms, more so than any other chest and arm before. Because, you know, I don't know if a lot of people know, goalies still end up black and blue along the arms at the NHL level. There's only so much protection available. But the chest on this piece wasn't that big. It just didn't present very big. It didn't look very big. And I talked to NHL goaltenders who said they liked the idea of the arms, but they would never wear it on that chest unit because it just made them look small. We did some testing here at In Goal Magazine. It was the first thing my beer leaguer teammate said to me is, man, you look tiny today. And so at retail, it wasn't a huge success. They couldn't sell it. It didn't look big. So it's on the NHL to find examples of that type of equipment that did provide enough protection. I mean, Vaughn has a chest and arm unit right now that throughout the belly and the inside of the chest piece actually uses Kevlar and the same principles in terms of layering and padding as a bulletproof vest. So that technology exists. It's on the NHL to find ways to kind of come up with rules that are going to kind of rein the corners in. Rounded corners are going to be a big part of it. Obviously, you know, we've seen kind of the squaring of the shoulders and over top of the shoulders. And that's the thing. You can have a set of rules, and then goalies will find a way to wear it differently that makes it look bigger within the confines of the rules. Pads are a perfect example. We saw the pad shrink. So what goalies have done, yes, the height of their pads is smaller. So they change the angle and the stiffness of the break at the bottom of the pad so that even though it was shorter overall, it sat higher on their skates. Guys have, Henrik Lundqvist was one of the first, removed the bootstrap or didn't the strap that goes from the bottom of the pad that used to run through the bottom of the skate, now he runs it through the back of his ankle. And there's a new set of skates that have this little loop behind the ankle. Bauer skates now all have that, the Lundqvist loop, we call it. So you can do that strap behind the ankle. What does that do? When you drop into the butterfly, the pad isn't pulled down on your foot. It allows it to slide up the leg and close the five hole. So this is the challenge. This is not easy for Kay Whitmore, but this is the challenge. He is going to come up with a smaller set of gear, and guys are going to right away, and companies are going to right away try and find ways that they can alter it, not physically because they're not allowed to, but alter the way they wear it so that it sits higher and looks bigger. So it's not an easy solution. I don't know if there is an easy solution, but I am encouraged by what I'm hearing in terms of the work that's gone into it throughout this season already, some of the looks they've had at, some of the people they're talking to about it, because every year in the past it was they waited till the summer, and the players were as much a fault as anyone else. Wait till the summer, try and come up with an agreement, bicker back and forth, and end up having the NHL tell them what they're going to do and then have no time to do it. They're way ahead of the curve on this one for next season, yet there's still a lot of work to be done.
You know, the NHL has, you know, at least started the conversation. They're working with the players and the competition committee to streamline some equipment, maybe make it smaller and safer. But, you know, you say one of the biggest hurdles the NHL has, Kevin, is that, you know, getting this equipment actually made. Do you think, like, should the NHL make their own goalie equipment? Is that possible?
Well, I'd say it's not a great industry to start with. It's a tough industry. Having known a few people that have ventured into it unsuccessfully outside of the big corporations. So it wouldn't be an easy answer in terms of the infrastructure involved. But in some ways, yeah, like at the very least, you'd kind of like to think that, you know, the R&D, there'd be a facility or maybe even hire somebody from the manufacturing side of things to really tell you honestly what is and isn't possible. Because I'm sure there's a level of cooperation with the manufacturers. But at the end of the day, if you ask them, hey, can you make this smaller? And the answer is sure, but I'm going to need to spend another $250,000 in new injection mold machines to recreate every part for that, let's say, for example, a glove, then, you know, that's not the answer you're probably going to want to hear, right? The answer is probably going to be no. So I think it puts them in a tough spot. I do think there is a level of cooperation there, but only to a certain extent. And so that if you had your own facility, the ability to really build prototypes beyond putting pieces together from other old equipment, you'd probably be able to come to a better answer. But hey, the people that are involved that have made this gear have been doing it for decades and generations. So it's not like it's a snap of the fingers operation, you know, process. That said, there are some smaller companies. It'd be interesting to see if the NHL, you know, were to approach some of the smaller independents, what level of cooperation they'd find there, because, you know, these people have a business to run as well, and they're not changes that happen overnight from a manufacturing process, but they're not even changes that happen overnight in terms of being able to outfit head to toe, you know, 90 NHL goaltenders, because you've got to have your guys in the American leagues playing by the same rules. I mean, that is an entire summer worth of equipment building, and at a time when you're changing the fit by changing the size for every guy and different body types, you're going to have goaltenders that aren't comfortable in what they were comfortable in the year before and perhaps even unsafe in certain areas in something they were wearing maybe the year before that's been cut back in certain ways, and they can't be getting that equipment a week before training camp starts and finding out, oh, crap, hey, not so much that you opened up holes, but you exposed holes in the equipment where my body is, and this is going to hurt. I mean, I'm a little biased on this one, Jason. I lost an appendix to a slap shot and a piece of equipment that didn't fit very well. But Roberto Luongo last year, you know, we all remember the game where him and Montoya both got hurt, and, you know, everybody kind of laughed it off as the goalie coach was getting dressed, and Roberto comes back from the hospital and ends up going back into that game before missing a couple weeks. Well, he did so with a fractured shoulder, and that was not a rocket. That was just a hard shot from a sharp angle that caught him not fully square to the play, and it found a gap in his shoulder protection, and it fractured a bone. You know, he's a guy who's actually, we talk about reducing and tightening the chest protector. He's a guy who suffered rib damage, bruised ribs, and missed time and had to add pieces of protection to his chest protector with NHL permission to protect the ribs better. So that's the other part. The concept of shrink wrapping these guys.
Yeah.
People have to understand, yes, it can get smaller a little bit around the edges, but you can't shrink wrap the goaltenders and fully expect them to stay safe. You're basically asking them to feel, if not every shot, then a lot more shots than they're feeling right now. The air gap that comes with loose, slightly loose-fitting equipment is part of the protective puzzle. People talk about bulletproof vests save your lives. Well, and if we have that technology, sure, we can keep goaltenders safe. Well, maybe I watch too many movies, but it seems to me the guy that takes one in a bulletproof vest doesn't get up in a hurry. He's not ready to stop the next rebound, that's for sure. You have to allow for some range of movement, and you have to allow for at least some level of air gap in that equipment to keep these guys protected. And the perfect example of this is Steve Mason. When he broke into the NHL, he was wearing gear that was too small for him. Nobody really walked him through, hey, you know, like, you're a couple sizes too small. You could wear something bigger. And he told me when Philly was through here just a couple weeks ago that, I mean, forget flinching. He was flinching and closing his eyes in games because he was black and blue underneath this equipment that was too small and therefore form-fitting, and he was feeling all these shots in practices especially and in games. So it's a fine line there, and I hope that they're going to find the time to do actual testing, not just, hey, this looks good and we think it might be safe, but actual testing with guys of different body types. Get a puck machine, wind it up to at least 90 miles an hour, and not that I'm volunteering to be that guinea pig, but find somebody who's willing to take those and test it from different angles and make sure that these guys are protected. Because if we hear a lot of screaming about goalies looking too big now, you're going to hear a different type of screaming if the $6 million starter goes down with cracked ribs or a fracture in his elbow or his shoulder because the gear didn't protect them. Or in Ryan Miller's case, after they reduced the length of the blocker in 04-05, a broken thumb that he links directly to that change that cost him a chance to represent his country at the 2006 Winter Olympics.
Kevin Woodley joined us. So Kevin, I think each fan base could nominate certain fans to have to go in and do the trial period to stay in there and see
if they...
You
sure they wouldn't ask the media?
Well, hey, media, sure, why not? Now, it's interesting about that equipment. You brought up the analogy of having kind of enough air to have some... Because if it's too tight, you're right. Yeah, it blocks it, but then it, you know, it still can leave a bruise and everything else underneath it. The pads, they got it right on the pads, right? Like, they shrunk the pads down a few inches, and goalies who were concerned about it, we haven't seen an increase at all in injuries from goalies due to pads. If anything, they've gotten quicker because of it. So what are the pads, just an easier one compared to chest and shoulder protectors, or do they have to follow the same model that they came up with the equation to shrink the pads with the other equipment?
Well, I think you've got to try and come up with, and listen, it's real easy for me to say, it's rich. You know, I don't envy Kay Whitmore trying to figure out what this looks like. Again, especially with so many different sizes from so many different equipment companies. But, you know, you need to sort of find parameters that allow you to find sizes for certain body types. And so that, you know, not everybody is wearing the same sizes, whether they're, you know, 215 pounds or 170 pounds, and whether they have, you know, because, hey, skinny guys have broad shoulders too. You better make sure those are protected. So there's probably going to be a measuring system in place. I don't pretend to know what it looks like. And when I talk about an air gap on top of that, you know, I don't know how much that is, and that's why I think you have to have that testing. I can't say with 100% certainty, does it need to stick an inch out? Does it need to be? But I think there are certainly, you know, rounding things off around the arms. We've seen chest protectors move to squared off arms. You know, again, puck hits that, it's got a better chance of deflecting away rather than hitting it and continuing on through the net. There are ways to tighten things up here and there around. As far as the pads, there were concerns when they reduced the height, and the concerns weren't just about closing the five hole because I don't want pucks going through there. The concerns from the goalies that I talked to were about exposed knees. And what I said was going to happen is, guys are going to just end up wearing much bigger knee pads, and they're going to close the five hole that way. And really, you're not going to be able to tell them they can't, because the kneecap is, you hit one of those without enough protection, then you're looking at 4 to 6 weeks. So if there's ever an area, all of us goaltenders know, where if you get one that finds a seam in your protection, you don't walk well for a week and it's black and blue for a month, that's it. So, and the real problem was for the guys who lost height on their pads, Jason, weren't comfortable, because throughout their career they counted on the pad to protect their knees. Now the pad's 2 inches shorter, it's not doing the job, and they've never worn a knee pad, a big bulky knee pad, underneath their leg pads before. And there were some guys that really struggled with it. Devin Dubnyk at Edmonton was black and blue on the inside of the knees, and he could not get used to wearing a bigger knee protection. There was one point where I actually brought a product to show him that, you know, had a, it was kind of like a, it's called G-Form, and Bauer since bought the hockey rights, but it's basically like a foam, but it's a smart foam where on impact it stiffens and absorbs a lot more of that impact. They make phone cases and stuff for extreme sports. And so he looked at that alternative. Dustin Tokarski, another guy who really struggled to get comfortable wearing bigger knee pads, and yet because his knees were more exposed, he needed it to stay protected. So if you reduce the height of the pads anymore, goalie's answer is going to be to wear bigger knee protection. I think they need to take a look at where the safe line is there, because I've seen some monstrosities in the locker room. And as much as you really need to make sure you have multiple layers over it, I think there are probably some that are a little carried away and probably are there to help make sure that gap closes on the knees as much as making sure the knees don't get black and blue. Other thing you can do on the pads, frankly, and I'm sure the manufacturers will be emailing me if they hear this to say I'm crazy, but you can take another inch off the outside of the pads. There was a big debate over 10-inch pads last time. They didn't think they could go that far. What we call the calf wrap that sits behind it. Most goalies have actually inset it at least an inch. There are only a handful in the NHL that don't have it inset. So it's not like the back of the leg is sticking outside of that calf wrap anyway. So if it's inset an inch, you don't need the extra padding on top of it. And there's something called an outer roll, Jason. You know, every set of pads sort of has on the outside edge from top to bottom, you can see this sort of bar that runs top to bottom. Some of them are a wedge shape. Some of them are just a rectangle, and it runs all the way up the outside edge of the pad. That was put in to stabilize the old sort of stuffed, fluffy pads that kind of provide a distinct edge. Well, guess what? These pads are all one-piece foam underneath. Yep. You don't need that outer roll anymore. And that's going to give you pucks that hit that. Instead of hitting the outer roll and dying underneath or staying down in front, there's a better chance, especially in tight, of a goalie getting a piece of that and going up and in and going into the net. So, again, not going to be easy on manufacturers. You're asking them to change everything they do, and a lot of this is automated overseas now. So you're asking them to retrain, change machining. It is not a cheap process. And I don't know that they're going to be happy to hear that, but those are things that I still think you can do. And I've talked to other NHL goaltenders that agree you could probably cut another inch off the width of the pads this year.
Yeah, it would make sense just because the width of the human leg is not that wide at all.
And we used to have guys that wear ACL braces. I remember actually Ole Kolzig, there was concern over him being able to fit that thing behind a 10-inch pad when he was playing with the Washington Capitals in the 04-05 lockout. But I think even with that, you'd be able to make a 10-inch pad work.
One last one for you, Kevin. I know every goalie I talk to is, you know, they're in favor of equipment shrinking before making the nets bigger, which I always wondered if that was just the NHL. Hey, let's throw that out, and then it'll be a good compromise. But what about the altering of the position of the goalposts, right? Changing the angle of them, not as rounded off. You know, just have it so if it hits on the inside of the post, it goes in. I don't see that really changing any major history of the game. What do you do as a goalie?
Well, I mean, no, because if you're going to – I can make an argument it does change the history because pucks that wouldn't go in now go in, but I don't care. Like, if that's what you got to do to make more pucks go in, that's fine. Just don't change the reference point in terms of where those posts are. To me, that's the big one. And I've even heard suggestions from some goalie coaches. I think Mitch Korn had it in an article where leave the width the same, but if you're going to add some height to it. The problem with changing the width is you have multiple generations of goaltenders, the ones coming up and the ones already here and the ones playing junior, that have literally, you know, for the guys who are already in the league, decades of built-in muscle memory, instinctive behaviors and positioning based on where those posts are. So, yes, they can work on changing it. But we are talking hundreds of thousands of repetitions for some of these guys to make that positioning innate and automatic. To change that now, I think all you're going to have is create a bunch of bad goals, goals where the guys think they're in position and they're not. And, hey, I guess goals are goals. But to me, that one, I have real troubles with that one. I think that's why you heard Luongo say years ago that he'd retire if they did it. If you want to raise the height of it, you're changing the history of the game for sure. I think you'll never see another 6-foot goalie or under again. Not that there's many left anyway.
Yeah, I was just going to say we barely are now.
Exactly. But at least, hey, more height above you requires more patience as a goaltender. And if you have to worry more about what's upstairs, you're less prone to taking away the bottom of the ice, which is what the butterfly was all about. prematurely. So you're going to have to, you know, give and take. You're going to have to force guys to be a little more patient on the skates, and you may see some of those low goals open up again as guys are trying to have to pick their poison on guys getting into range. So, you know, I'd be open to any of those suggestions. I think yours is the best alternative of the bunch, to find posts that are going to lead to a few more posts and ins as opposed to posts and outs, without having to basically have guys try and reset something they've spent their entire life trying to make innate.
Kevin, excellent stuff, man. I appreciate the extra say. We got so much. We got a lot of great feedback. People are loving Crease Lightning, so we'll talk to you again next Monday. Excuse me.
Absolutely, my pleasure, and I will leave you with one closing thought. Amid all of this and all these changes,
yeah,
goalies are not going to change how they play. We won't see stand-up kick saves. That era is done.
It's too bad, though, eh?
I'm willing to bet that the goaltenders will continue to dominate, and I don't think this is going to provide all the answers that everybody hopes it does.
Yeah, well, I would agree with you there. I think it's one issue whatsoever. The goalies are just better. The teaching of the position is way better than ever has been. But if there was a way to outlaw butterfly and force goalies to go back to stand-up goalies and kick saves and two-pad stacks, we'd see more goals, but we'd also see way more better entertaining saves because the two-pad stack was money.
Well, hey, if you're looking for a two-pad stack, just watch Cam Ward. He usually throws him out once or twice a game. Well, then check his save percentage and see whether he gets another contract and get back to me after that.
Yeah, well, Fleury had a sick one on the weekend, too, his two-pad stack. It was money.
I'm all about the old school. You got to pull it out every once in a while. But I just think, like you said, the goalies are better, and there's a reason. We go to school in the summer. We go to school before practice. We go to school after practice. I wish the shooters would start to do the same.
Yeah, we'll get into that next week. Appreciate it, Kev.
Sounds good, Jason. Take care.